Excuse me. Dressing room. Magic Sam used to do that, and then he died. So I'm hoping not to complete that particular cycle. I met Dizzy Gillespie in Italy many years ago on the street. He was loading drums into a station wagon in Milano. He was the roadie for the day. And I waved and gaped at him and loaded, did whatever it was I was doing. And he walked up the street and talked to me for about half an hour. I could have asked him about Charlie Parker or Billy Eckstein or any number of things. But instead, we talked about sleep. Why you don't get any, why you're not allowed any. And why you must develop the catnap to fall asleep for about 10 seconds and wake up again. I can do that, but always at inappropriate times. At the wrong time. For some reason, I keep looking over here. I'm going to try to stop doing this because there's nothing over here for me to see. Just very attracted to something. This is called Snorkel. It has a little bit to do with the fact that I have drowned 4 times in my life. I could maybe say before I come up to the microphone. Pee Wee Russell a great musician was describing his drinking problem to a jazz critic, mainly for the lower 48 states, Whitney Ballier, and told of the time when he went out to get a pack of cigarettes, told his wife he was going out to get a pack of cigarettes, and came back 3 years later. She, by then, was working in a nightclub. Someone came up to her and said, "Pee-wee is here." She said, "Get rid of him," and hid in the kitchen. And while she was hiding in the kitchen, someone else, another waitress, came back and said, "You should see him. Even his feet look sad." Which has nothing to do, really, with how this tune came about, but it's a great title, I think. Out one of my favorite parts. I want to hear it even if you don't get to it. Oh, I got it, yeah. All right. This was written for a wedding by Eddie Reeves and Alex Harvey. Thank you. these two people are, they can be reminded of how wrong they can be about their deepest feelings.
One of the reasons people
still come to hear me play is that I have never made a Christmas record. I'm convinced of that. But I'm asked every year, usually in the summer, to make one. Finally, I had to write not a whole record, but at least one tune. They objected to, they wanted me to do, you know, Silent Night, or, which has been done, I think. And I've said, you know, how, I'm not too precious to try, but you try to put an edge on Silent Night, Siri. Straight to the crucifix. high school, I got to say hello to John Hurt and to hear him play. He played at a little club in Washington, D.C., called the Ontario Place. I was about 16. He was about 316. And he was famous for, or infamous for, a hat that he wore. He never removed the hat, and it was a horrible, horrible looking hat. So I can only think it held his skull together. And he came out that night in the, excuse me, I might go through this. In the hat, and he did this song. It's the first time I heard this song. And right down here, it was a very small club, was his wife. First of all, she looked worse than his hat did. Fairly grim, you know. And I only say that because every now and then during this song, John would look at her and smile. And he had the most radiant smile I've yet seen. She would smile back at him. And I was only 16, but it was clear to me that they had something I would never have. Resist tuning some more. Later, I met Sam Chapman. Sandwich in the out in the sun. It was hot, and I said, "Aren't you Sam Chapman?" And he said, "Yes. Would you like a bite of my peanut butter and jelly sandwich?" No. And he told me that he had eaten only peanut butter and jelly for the last 20 years of his life, and that I could live that long if I would restrict my diet to peanut butter and jelly. I told him I didn't want to live that long. Turning into dark. And Everybody trying, everybody alive. Won't you tell me now? I can see you now. Tell me why. Everybody tries, everybody lies. Everybody lies. I did an interview last year with a 12-year-old girl named Clara for a radio station. It was a horrible interview. It was mainly my fault, because I was afraid of her. You know, you never know what they have up their sleeve at that age. They can be mean. I mean, you know. So, as the interview sort of crashed and burned, and, she resorted to a question that could not have occurred to her, because at 12 years old, I don't think you could care less. But she asked me what my major influences were. And I lied, you know, and I said, well, Thelonious Monk and Stravinsky. Actually, Stravinsky really did catch on for me, but I don't remember it. I was 2 years old, and I would beg to hear Petrushka. And I would run in little circles and scream until I dropped. And once my mother realized how she could knock me out, I got all the Stravinsky I could handle. Maybe that's why I've blotted that from my memory. But I know beyond any doubt that I have enjoyed Pete Seeger's instrumentals since I was a kid. He's a great instrumentalist, but he never pays any attention to it himself. This is I like this, and I learned it when I was in high school. Same year I saw John Hurt, and that smile. I'm going to play this and then take the customary intermission. Ordinarily, you would just play straight through, but I've learned that it's customary not to in some places, and also that it's merciful not to. So there'll be a short break, and I'll come back. I always mention that I have dreams about this, where I come back and you don't. Please don't do that to me. Thank you. just lucky that they come along, and then I have to think of a name for them. But I think in this case, I really, it's directly connected with a friend of mine from Ljubljana, Slovenia. And I lost track of her a few years ago, and it occurred to me one day to call the operator in Ljubljana, you know, ask for her phone number, Seka Tavčar is her name. And they put me on hold to look for the number and played this music, the hold button music. After hearing that music, I must have called information 10 or 12 times after that. Single most played song in the history of radio worldwide, I think to this very day, is Yesterday, Paul McCartney's song. It came to him in a dream. He dreamed that. He was a Beatle, he was a millionaire, and he was living in the attic of his girlfriend's parents' house. And he woke up, which I really admire, and he woke up one morning with this, he dreamed this. No, well, I'm not going to play it, but he dreamed yesterday. sat down at the piano and played it. This, what I am going to play, also came in a dream to Duane Allman. He woke up and remembered the tune. Not only do they dream it, they remember dreaming it, and they remember the tune that they dream. When I do that, I get Silent Night or one of those. But really, you know, it really irritates me what the I mean, I would. Anyhow, this is an arrangement of Duane Allman's tune. Expands and contracts so that you stand up here tuned too much. But really, it's got more to do with Bach than anything else. An old troublemaker. If it weren't for him, we wouldn't have to play in any more than two keys. And we'd always be in tune. But since Bach, everybody's a little bit out of tune everywhere, just so you can play in all of the keys. I'm not sure that's worth it, really. That may be the definition of an indefensible opinion, but shuts down, you'll find that it's stranger than known. Signs in the street that say where you're going are somewhere just being there. Thank you. great job, you know. They let you play and then they pay you for it. Just a couple more here. Eventually, after recording this tune, got to meet the author and play a couple shows with him, Paul Siebel. He was very depressed. He had the reputation of being the most depressed man in show business. And I knew why. I mean, he was depressed, but the thing was, he hated going on stage, which is a handicap in show business. I met him 2 years ago, and this is the second time I had seen him in about 25 years. And he'd given up the guitar and songwriting and performing, and he'd become a baker, and he was smiling. He was one happy guy. I've only seen one other person backstage as down as Paul Siebel was, and that was a guy in Buffalo, New York. And I walked into the dressing room, and there was this heap over here in the corner, and I said, "You must be the opening act." And he said, "Yeah, I am." I said, "Are you okay?" And he said, "I just got back from my vacation." I said, "Where'd you go on your vacation?" And he said, "Hanoi," which to my mind was not a real resort hotspot. That's where he'd been. And I said, "Ah, why'd you go there?" And he didn't answer me. He said, "I have malaria." And the stage manager came along a little bit later and said, "It's showtime." So this guy sort of oozed out the door behind the stage manager, and I was right behind him because I didn't want to miss this. And he walked up on stage and he sat down and he did one of those, and he looked up for the first time and he said, "I have malaria." What a great night that was. You know, it's interesting to me, and I like this, that the exit signs here are blue. Frequently, as you know, they're red, which I think just matches the color of fire. So maybe they become useless. And these are the things that catch your attention sometimes. They say that the breeze was not out there. It was written on the walls and window shades. And though she'd act a little girl, I did see her, don't believe her. That's her trade. Sometimes a bottle of perfume, flowers, and maybe some ladies. Men brought the weed, 10 cent trinket. Their intentions were easily traced, and everybody knew at times she cried. Oh, thank you. Everybody thought it kind of sad when they found blue beads in a row. They'd always put her down below their kind. Still some cry when she died this afternoon. Louise rode home on the mail train, somewhere to the south, I heard them say, too bad it ended so ugly, too bad she had to go this way. The wind is blowing cold tonight. So good night, Louise, good night. Couple years ago, I was feeling guilty because I hadn't been doing my homework. I hadn't been reading the masters and learning my scales and stuff. So I decided to learn a couple of Mozart pieces, and I started with, you know, that one. I plowed through it. I finished it. I felt proud of myself, and then learned that this was a piece written by Leopold Mozart. That was his dad, you know. So I have a piece by Mozart's dad in my repertoire. It's disturbing. What's he doing here? He wasn't that nice a guy either, was he? I think sounds like an old, never mind. Maybe that's Mozart's dad. Well, before I get much more drifty, I want to thank you for coming and for listening. It's a pleasure to be back here, and I hope I see you next year. figure out what. There's something. Sort of a, I'll just play this thing. I get a big kick out of this tune because it's it hits this, when it works, it hits this bell spot in a guitar. This is one of the few pieces I've got that other people are playing.